Welcome to the CodeCast Podcast. Real-world insights for your daily medical coding and billing processes. And now, here's your host, Terry Fletcher.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 29 of the CodeCast Podcast. My name is Terry Fletcher, and today we are going to revisit the topic of telehealth. And so way back in November, I did a telemedicine podcast, but today I want to have another conversation with you, mainly in light because the fact that this is telehealth week. The American Telemedicine Association conference is in Chicago this week, and a lot of enlightening things have really come up when it comes to telemedicine services and implementation of that. I know MGMA has done quite a bit of information or quite a bit of research on what would be appropriate for, you know, practices that want to really approach the subject and get into it. So I really wanted to have a conversation just to kind of keep your ears open and have you really understand where the direction is going in the country right now. And so, and when we're talking about that, really also understanding that, you know, it's really not, I don't want to say it's not a choice, but it's not something that you can brush aside. Telehealth and telemedicine services are services that really are going to be part of our lives, you know, forever. So we want to really just have that conversation and understand where we're going with it. Before I get started, though, I want to thank my sponsoring partners, Better Living. Since 2002, Better Living has been the premier digital lifestyle brand dedicated to travel, food, health, home, and more on betterliving.com. And Telemedicine Home, connecting patients, caregivers, and doctors to assist patients to live healthier lives at home. telemedhome.com. So actually, that's a great sponsor as we lead into our information. So when I'm having a conversation, I did talk about telemedicine and is it for you way back in November of 2017. It was actually one of my, I think my number three podcast. And so now as we're 6 months into this and really looking at some of the topics and things we've talked about, one of the things that just in the last 6 months I've noticed is that our lives are becoming more and more remote. I don't know if you've noticed that, but higher education can be achieved without setting a foot inside of college. We can keep up to date with our friends and family without, you know, catching a train or a plane to get there. And shopping is delivered to our doors with a simple click of a button. So overall life is, you know, now manageable from a computer or our smartphones, and very little exists that cannot be accessed or administered from an online perspective. So the same note, though, can now be said about telemedicine. The process of managing health from a distance via telephone, video, email, or instant messaging system. This is now becoming increasingly popular, and with more than, from what I'm told from the last research I saw, more than 36 million Americans make use of this service daily, and more than half of Americans have access to telemedicine program. So while telemedicine has gained a lot of popularity over the last 10 years, let's say, it's really nothing new. I mean, think about it back as early as the 1900s, and I did some research on this. There were two-way radios that were used between medics and people living in maybe the Australian outback to resolve common ailments. So or think about, okay, now I'm going to age myself, but think about if you were, you know, an 80s child. Remember that show Emergency with, you know, Kevin Tai and Randolph Mantooth? I mean, we love them. And basically they were talking to Rampart Hospital over their two-way radios about what they were going to do to the patient, you know, and it's still the same. I mean, when it comes to any kind of EMS service. But it's just interesting that, you know, when we're looking at modern telemedicine, that's significantly more sophisticated. But the original concept, you know, still remains. If a patient cannot or does not want to attend a clinic or a hospital, they now have the option to have their health or matter investigated remotely. But we have to look and see, is this a good idea before we jump, you know, headfirst into it? So one of the key advantages of telemedicine offers is that it offers speed. So given that the wait time in some places to see a family doctor can be as long as 2 weeks, telemedicine automatically cuts this wait time down so that the patient can speak to a professional on the day or time of their choice or much sooner. The wait times have been actually 0 to 2 days on the average. So similarly, clinicians are able to control the appointment with better efficiency because they have fewer interruptions and holdups because of the time they block for it. And the great news is that the quality of the speedier appointment doesn't seem to be compromised from the research that's being done. So, in fact, a study of 8,000 patients that was done through the Mayo Clinic using telemedicine services did not show any difference between virtual appointments and face-to-face appointments as far as outcomes. So traditionally, you know, general practitioners, they have been almost entirely dependent upon word of mouth and retail presence to attract new patients. So think about it. You know, building a client base is a core business process. But the problem for doctors is that, you know, visible retail space is very expensive, and their dependence upon that retail location puts them in a difficult position. Because in some areas, new, you know, businesses cease to come in as the retail environment around the doctor's practice can dry up. So this is a common, what they call ghost malls, where once thriving businesses are now all gone, and then the doctor's ability to earn is largely also depend on the landlord's willingness to change their rental to be fair and their fees. And it's not uncommon for doctors to discover that their success is diminished by oversized rental increases every time they renew their lease. So what telemedicine can do is give doctors a way to develop new clients and expand their practice without being locked into a single location, and also, you know, really create some new patient opportunities that maybe you didn't realize were actually there before. And, you know, there also is a cost reduction all around. So multiple studies have demonstrated that cost savings are inevitable with the introduction of telemedicine. And I like to put it in also perspective. So I'm doing a podcast right now. You're listening into something where you don't have to actually show up at a seminar to hear me talk. You're not actually attending a webinar, which we hope you do at some point. But you know, we're doing this remotely, so you're able to pull up your phone, you know, click on podcast app and pull this up immediately. So there's a lot of things when it comes to the cost savings, and I'm not traveling, so my cost is lower, and your cost is lower about getting it. So it's the same with health. You know, the Geisinger Group, the health plan, studied suggested that telemedicine programs generate about 11% in cost savings due to an estimated return on investment of $3.30 in cost savings for every dollar spent on its implementation. So at the moment, around $4.4 billion, believe it or not, is wasted each year in unnecessary trips to the emergency room alone, a problem which is arguably contributing to high healthcare costs. So telemedicine reduces this problem by offering an in-home triage service, so giving people instructions on whether or not a physical trip to the hospital will be necessary. What's more, employers could save, I would say, anywhere from $1 to $2 billion each year by introducing telemedicine to their employee wellness schemes. You know, think about that. Keeping absences low with a healthier, well-tended to workforce. As for the patients, reduced cost of travel, unpaid time off work will also benefit their bank accounts. So the service you're offering by even considering telemedicine is really important. But, you know, a loss of personal touch is always what a physician practice is looking at. And it's inevitable, like with all innovations. Telemedicine may not be for everyone. Those less well acquainted with the technology might feel fearful or suspicious of having their data handed over the phone or via instant messaging services or a video conferencing type service. Others might miss the personal touch of visiting a doctor or might withhold information over the phone that will have otherwise been disclosed in private, a safe space in the doctor's office. But the opposite can also be true. Some patients might feel less inhibited talking about seemingly embarrassing health problems in the absence of face-to-face contact. So this could increase their likelihood to actually seek professional help in the first place. And just think about that from a telehealth perspective. You know, one thing that is controversial is mental health services. But when you look at the mental health services and what's necessary out there for that, it's really interesting when you bring telehealth into it. And I'm going to comment on that in just a minute. But then we look at medical ethics. And of course, This should be considered in detail. Without one-to-one interaction, doctors could miss symptoms that have gone unnoticed by the patient, putting them at risk of disease and conditions worsening. Furthermore, data storage and privacy will need to be stringently administered, ensuring patients feel just as comfortable talking about their problems from home as they do in the clinic without risk of data loss or administrative efforts. And you still also want to make sure that you understand HIPAA is still a part of this. And of course, patients should be empowered to know when telemedicine is appropriate and when emergency services or specialty services or primary care services are necessary to be intervened upon. But given the inevitable cost and studies so far generating and indicating this great success of telemedicine, it's clear that this evolving medical innovation will be beneficial in enhancing the good health across, our country right now. So when we look at this from a perspective of actual clinical specialties. Let's think about this for a second. And before I get into that, I just want to make sure I also mention our sponsor, Due. They make it easier to get paid online. Due customers love how they make payments easier, faster, and smoother. Due.com. So when we look at this, how telemedicine is providing some services, one of the branches of medicine, and I kind of alluded to it earlier, is when we're dealing with patients who have mental health issues, psychotherapy. Now, I want to focus just a little bit on veterans because this has been really successful for Veteran Affairs, that they're the largest healthcare system in the country and the Department of Veteran Affairs. And for a lot of veterans, coming into a clinic is very difficult. And it would be impossible for a clinic to be in every, veterans neighborhood where telemedicine. And that's where telemedicine can come into play. So clinicians were discussing this at the ATA conference in Chicago. And it's interesting that it turns out that distance isn't the only hurdle in treating patients living with mental health disorders. And again, I'm referring back to the veteran issue. One of the research psychologists at the Department of Veteran Affairs was speaking at the conference, and I was listening in to a virtual discussion. See, I did it remotely as well. Everything is remote nowadays. And she said that, and when she works with patients with OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, the condition causes patients to have recurrent unwanted thoughts as well as behaviors, which, the person feels drawn to complete in order to get rid of the thought. And so one of the things, the biggest thing, and the triggers, I should say, is germs. So when you're dealing with that, this means that for some patients, coming into a hospital or clinic creates that extra layer of anxiety on top of their already, substantiated health issues. And then what you want to do is, if you have video-based therapy, which is something they're looking into, where a client is exposed to very limited stimuli, but they're basically get to have this video from their home. And remember, treatment for OCD based on the downloads for what is appropriate for money is it requires 20 sessions, usually 90 minutes each, to be able to say you've had a full session and full treatment plan. And these patients have very high anxiety levels already, and they're not able to come into the clinic because of that anxiety. So in hospitals are huge triggers for these patients. And so if you have the option to have virtual-based care where the patients are at home, then it also can really help the patient be a little bit more well-adjusted when it comes to the practical application of what they actually need to have happen. So remote therapy is being used to really help veterans who've experienced, this kind of OCD or trauma or have mental health issues. And I just think that that's one of the specialties, if you will, that really focus on when we're talking about telemedicine. I'm not saying that we don't have other specialties that are part of it and could benefit from it. My specialty background is I deal a lot with cardiology and orthopedic physicians and gastro and ophthalmology and interventional radiology. I'm multi-specialty, not every specialty, but 10 of them. And it's interesting because there's a place for it, in my opinion, in every single practice, but it's really an addition. You think of critical care or chronic care management. You think of transitional care management and just some of these things that are out there that are options for patients and for practices to implement that aren't necessarily face-to-face. And one of the things I really would like to see is just, you know, practices embrace it as a supplement. And think about this, you know, you've got established patients that just can't get in because they don't have a problem that is bigger, right? I hate to say bigger, but that isn't as severe, let's look at it that way, as another patient, or they know that your practice is, you know, typical for long wait times, then you think that those patients aren't going to want to exercise the potential of telemedicine services. I guarantee you, if you give them the option, then you're going to have some positive outcomes there. So we really wanted to at least give the option for that kind of information, and that makes things so much better. So before we get into looking at I'm going to give you some tips for implementing health services, just some things to think about. But I want to talk first about the FIA Group, an experienced provider of healthcare cost containment techniques offering services designed to control healthcare costs and protect plan assets, FIAGroup.com. And so when we look at these tips for implementing services, first of all, set clear goals and tie them to your strategic plan. Telehealth works best when it's part of your program, as I mentioned. The fewer changes that you need to make, the easier the adoption will be. And you need to also get staff input. Make sure your staff's on board, because if they're not on board, or they're rolling their eyes at it, or they're thinking, oh great, they're adding something else that we can't handle, that's going to cause a problem and it's not going to be efficient in how it's executed. And so you really want to make sure that you've got everybody on board, from your back office staff to physicians to clinicians, you know, your mid-level providers to your billers and your coders, and they know what they're doing as well, because that's going to be a huge issue when it comes to facilitating these services. Understand your patients' wants and needs. Set out a survey. You know, basically have them pick one up in the office, send out a survey online if you have that option. Put it in a patient portal. Ask the patients to, if you have a website, and I talked about that not too long ago on a podcast, and have patients go online and ask them if they'd fill it out. See what how their reaction would be to, you know, having some telemedicine options, and would they actually use it? And also, the biggest thing is, would your patients pay for it if their insurance didn't cover it? That should be on your survey. Determine how telehealth supports your value-based care initiatives. You know, you have to report things now for, you know, PQRI, which now we get into MIPS and MACRA and all of those quality measure issues when it comes to making sure that you're going to get your bonuses for those services. And telemedicine is one of those things you actually have to implement from you have to implement it showing that you're doing something as well as telehealth service department. Now, do you have to do it as a, you know, a service that you provide? No, we're talking about should you. But is it something that you need to show that you're proactive at it to help, you know, with your value-based care initiatives? You do. So why not also get paid for it? Research reimbursement and licensure options that are required in your area. Make sure you also know as far as what Medi-Cal will pay for it. The reason I say that, and when I say Medi-Cal, I also mean Medicaid. You can tell I'm in California. Medicaid actually has more coverages for telehealth than any other payer does. So that's actually kind of interesting, the fact that they'll pay for more things if the patient isn't face-to-face than if they are. But also know what Medicare pays. Medicare is starting to slowly open up the options for telehealth services, such as chronic care management and, you know, transitional care management, things like that. But as far as paying for just office visits or a visit, they're not quite there yet, unless you're in a depressed area or a rural area and on the list for that, but they're almost there. But you do have some commercial plans that are just running with this. I know I have an EPO with my plan under Delta Health, and they have something called plush care. And so anywhere, if I travel a lot for my job, as you know, and so anywhere I am in the country, if I need to call in and get telehealth services or get something, I can get it. And there's no copay, no deductible. And it's definitely something they pay for. They pay for it just as if I walked into a regular doctor's office. Research telehealth vendors and platforms. The reason I say that, there's a couple of vendors out there, and I can't name names, but just do your due diligence, do your research. There's, you know, some good options out there for companies that are willing to take on the transition But just know that they're pretty big on not letting you know that most services are cash pay, even though there are some payer options. So be careful with that just when you're getting into those vendors. Reach out to colleagues in your specialty who have already adopted telehealth so you can learn from their implementation experience and just really, you know, kind of figure out what they're doing and you know, kind of get some information from them so that you can hear what's happening there. And then discuss liability issues with your medical malpractice carrier. You know, that's pretty big. Just make sure that they know this is something you're thinking of and where's the liability lay, especially if you're not going to see the patients face to face, and is there an issue that you need to address. Be patient, mindful, and realistic with the timeline. This may take close to a year to implement between idea and implementation. And get somebody who knows what they're doing. You know, obviously I'm very involved in this, so somebody that really embraces the concept or a company that you've looked at these vendors and these platforms. So feel free to email us if you're interested in that as well. And then include these new services in your marketing plan for your practice. Make sure when you're putting out what you provide, if you're a gastro provider, gastroenterologist, and you provide, you know, the good colon checkups and things like that, also put something out there about how you provide, you know, telemedicine. If you are an ophthalmologist or an optometrist and you need to put something out there as far as, you know, you can get pink eye checked through telemedicine. Oh my gosh, those doctors are so happy right now. Or if you are, you know, a mental health, you know, organization, that's one thing too. If you are cardiology or primary care practice and you have patients that are, I don't want to say failing in health, but their chronic conditions are definitely causing some issues where they need to have some management and you have some options with chronic care management, then you want to include some services that may not be face-to-face, but that you do offer through your marketing plan and make sure patients understand that. And then one of the last things, engage and educate your staff. So how to code, how to bill, how to get reimbursed for telehealth services. It is a process. For anybody who's interested, once you make the decision, are you going to move on with telemedicine? You'll find an upcoming webinar on telemedicine on my website on June 26th on terryfletcher.net. So make sure that you think about joining that because there is a fee for it. We charge $199 for each of our webinars, but you get your PowerPoint presentation, you get your, you know, your links to where Medicare says what you can and can't do and some of the payers as well. And then we also give you examples. If this happened, this is how you code for it. This is how you report it. And just understanding a little bit more of the process. So we hope that you do engage in some of our education pieces as well as listening in to our tips and information when it comes to our telehealth services. So hopefully that you did find that helpful. Also want to mention, I had a couple people tell me that, you know, please mention on your podcast some of the things that you have going on so that we don't miss it. And so just wanted to let you know, I do have a three-part series that's coming up. Now, I think this is going to air possibly after part one has started, but we will have that on demand and a transcript if you need it. But we're on how to choose a level of an E&M service. I think that's important because, you know, we don't always get the back to basics when it comes to that. And I just really want everyone to know how to do that. I think that even though we have the 97 and 95 guidelines, it's amazing to me how people just aren't familiar still with how to choose a level of service. So this is something that we really want to just make sure that we're understanding what's going on there. And, you know, we're going to break it down into history, exam, medical decision making, and really just give you that step by step. So take a look again at my website and you'll see that. And the last thing we want to do, remember, we're going to do one coding question after every podcast now. So our coding question today comes from a California subscriber to my coding corner, and it says, we are experiencing some confusion with ICD-10 guidelines for myocardial infarctions, MIs, that's a heart attack. What ICD-10 code should we report if the patient has an old MI? Okay, so you should report I-25.2 for old myocardial infarction. This is for old or healed MIs, not requiring further care according to the official guidelines of ICD-10. The conditions included in I-25.2 are healed myocardial infarction, past myocardial infarction diagnosed by an ECG or EKG or other investigation, but currently presenting no symptoms. So you can also look to the 4-week rule in Chapter 9 of the guidelines for further clarification. So it says if an MI is 4 weeks old or less, for any encounters that happen while the patient's MI is 4 weeks old or less, which itself includes transfer to another acute or post-acute setting, then you want to go to the I-21 codes. And so it does give you some information in the guidelines for that, but it's just sticking specifically to the question, then I would definitely look at the I-25.2 because I know there was some confusion there. So we hope that everybody enjoyed today's episode of our CodeCast podcast, a little bit of telehealth information there, and then just some information on things that are coming up for us. So everybody go out and make it a great day, and we really hope to continue the downloads. And also, if you have a chance, please go to iTunes and to Google Play and rate us on there. We appreciate all ratings, hopefully positive, keeps us on the air. So again, everybody make it a great day, and thank you for listening in.
For more information on medical coding, billing, auditing, and compliance, including how to hire Terry, follow Terry on Twitter at TerryCoder1 or visit her website at www.terryfletcher.net. Podcast producer Joe Kuzma. Music producer Dasassin Music.